Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road presented by Green Ventures Landscaping, outdoor patios, landscaping design, lawn maintenance, and more. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Predators Assistant General Manager Brian Poyle will join us at 7:30. They are back in action a week from today. So we'll have Brian Poyle with us later this hour coming up at 7:30. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for his weekly visit coming up at 8 o'clock. We will get into the Titans and all things NFL with him. Well, as I mentioned, it is wheeling and dealing season coming up for general managers in the National Football League. We've got free agency here in just a few weeks. And then after that, the attention will turn to the draft. The NFL Combine is next week. So we are officially into full go of the NFL offseason coming up here very shortly. And, Joe, we have our first of what I assume will be many mock drafts at The Athletic that you have participated in. You have already started the wheeling and the dealing this NFL offseason.
Oh, yeah, get excited. I don't know how many of these there'll be. It seems like, well, usually there's probably, what, about three at least, right?
Yeah.
Three, four, something like that. But, yes, writers at The Athletic pretend to be GMs. So there's a lot of talk of trading. And I will tell you right now that I put it out there. I mean, I think the Titans should. I open for business at four. So anybody wants to move up to four, open for business. And I will tell you that, again, this is writers acting as GMs, and most of these writers are actual beat writers of these teams. So they're pretty plugged into what their teams are thinking and whatever. I got no bites. I got no bites. No one wanted to move up to four. So
very
disappointing. I don't know if you want to take much from that or not, but I will tell you, and again, I don't know, I probably can't go through the entire thing here posted today, but I will tell you that the writer GMs are not as desperate to draft a quarterback, and this has happened before, as actual GMs.
Yeah.
So Ty Simpson did not go in the first round. So again, that's one of those things where it's like it makes sense. But then when in real life, when you get down to it and you get to one of these situations, I still have my serious doubts that Ty Simpson won't go in the first round.
So it's interesting the way that, and again, we're not going to go through like pick by pick here of the mock draft that took place at The Athletic. But from your perspective, Titans are picking at number four, and the way that this played out before pick number four comes up, I think if it plays out this way in actuality, lends itself to a pretty interesting situation here if you're the Titans. So, look, nobody's going to be surprised when the Raiders take Fernando Mendoza, number one overall. Matter of fact, at this point, I'd be surprised if they didn't take Fernando Mendoza, number one overall. You've got the edge rushers that we've talked about in Arvell Reese, David Bailey, and Reuben Bain, that one of those guys, if Mendoza goes at number one, is going to be available for the Titans at number four. Well, in this particular exercise, you had Reese off the board at number two, and the Cardinals went a different way at number three, which meant, Joe, with your spot, you had Bailey available, you had Bain available, you had Caleb Downs available, you had Carnell Tate available, and we've talked a lot about those guys. If it plays out that way for the Titans, I think if you're a Titans fan, you'd probably sign up for that right now to have those options available to you at number four.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's a lot of talent. And again, your guy, Caleb Downs, we'll tell you this. First of all, I took Bailey, and I think if the Titans get a chance to take David Bailey at number four, I think that'd be awfully hard to pass up. Again, is this sometimes these things happen at this stage and things don't change that much. I don't expect Fernando Mendoza to change that much. It feels like, again, the Arvell Reese, the Micah Parsons stuff, it feels like he's going to stay right at the top there, but who knows? I mean, this is where the combine can come into play. and certain things can shift things around. And you know, teams can have their own preferences and whatever, scheme fits, all that stuff. But it just feels like Arvell Reese might be someone that won't be a Titans option. We all know what's going to happen at one. And then, if it is true that the Cardinals have so many needs, but it seems like they are probably best offensive tackle team. I mean, maybe not. We'll see. But again, even if that's the case, you have a ton of them available. It's just that, I mean, I think the two that are clearly high in this draft would be obviously, is it? I say Fano, but is Spencer Fano? Is that
Fano,
really how
I
you
believe, is
say
what it
it?
is.
It's
Yeah, I
Fano? My
believe so.
gosh. Okay. Spencer Fano from Utah and Francis Mauigoa from Miami. Those are like the two guys who I think. But again, how do they compare to, I'm sorry to keep talking about offensive tackles, everybody, but just saying, like, there's a lot of them that I think are going to go in the first round. Those two seem to be the high ones. But are they like, oh, you have to drop everything and draft this guy?
Right.
I don't think so, relative to like the edges. And then again, even some of the other, people we've talked about, Love and Downs, these quote unquote non-premium positions that if the but the players themselves are so good that they're probably going to go really high for players at those positions.
Yeah, another thing that's going to be interesting is how do teams, when this draft rolls around, have the receivers ranked, right? Like, Tate is what most people I've seen have going as the first receiver off the board. There are some people that really love Tyson from Arizona State. There are some people that really love your boy Mekhi Lemon. I'm looking at this mock draft, Joe, and I'm just thinking about, like, I think the Rams in this draft. Remember, the Rams have two first round picks. They got the trade with Atlanta last year. So the Rams are picking at number 13, and they're picking later in the draft. I believe it's, is it 29? Is it 30? Where are they at? They're 29. So you got two first round picks if you're the Rams, who, in my opinion, right now, I think are already the second best team in football from what we saw this last year. And you're looking at it, and the Rams in this particular exercise end up with Mekhi Lemon at number 13 and end up with Colton Hood at number 29. So you're talking about one of the best rosters in football, and you put Mekhi Lemon with Davante Adams and Puka Nacua for Matthew Stafford to distribute the ball to. And then, oh, by the way, go get a first-round corner later on in the first round.
Yeah, like if they get Mekhi Lemon, like I'm absolutely, I'm gonna push in a big pile of chips on them winning it all. I mean, he's every year I have players that I'm like probably overly enamored with. Like what was our
You
guy
loved
from?
Rondale Moore.
Yeah,
Boy,
I
did
was
you
gonna
love
say
Rondale Moore.
I probably liked Rondale Moore a little too much, right? Like he was fine, I was like, dude, that guy's gonna be unbelievable. I swear Mekhi Lemon's going to be a star. He's the second receiver off the board in this draft. In real life, it probably is going to play out that way, I guess, that Tate would go before him. But if the Rams get him, yeah, and then a corner. And by the way, that's two Tennessee corners
Yeah.
in the first round. The beat writers like to just like, the other mock drafts we've seen and player rankings we've seen. Two Tennessee Vols corners in the first round, one of which didn't play at all,
Yeah,
so
like
too bad.
obviously the local interest part of that with him being a Vol, I am in actuality very interested to see how that plays out with Jermon McCoy, because like all these mock drafts I'm seeing, whether it's this one we're talking about, the other mock drafts that start to come out this time of year, like all of them, Joe, have McCoy somewhere from like 11 to 16. And I'm like, I get it. The last time we saw him play, two seasons ago at this point, he was very good. But I just wonder, how much the injury is going to factor into this, or if it's going to at all by the time the draft actually comes around.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who, because obviously the size and the film from last year is, hey, it's the film from last year, right? And we talked about it last season. Like, man, look at what he's become as a player. I think as long as the medicals check out, and I mean, we'll see if he runs and all that stuff. That's an interesting question for a guy who didn't play. Not to go off the beaten path here, but for a guy who didn't play last year, has an ACL, has film, but it's from 24, I would assume running would be like you gotta run,
I would
right?
assume that that would probably help you.
So if he does,
Or I guess
you
hurt
know,
you,
and he
depending on how
runs,
you run.
and he, yeah, but he, as long as he does, yeah, as long as it's not a bad time to me, I think, I mean, a first round seems awfully likely for him.
I would agree. The Carnell Tate part of this is going to be interesting. Like, I think one of the more intriguing teams in the draft here is going to be Kansas City at 9. Because we've talked about the possibility of Jeremiah Love ending up at number 9 with Kansas City. I mean, there's also a chance that they take one of these receivers. Like, look, Kansas City, frankly, if you go look at their roster, and this is why they had the season that they had, they could use help at a lot of different spots, right? Like, if they've had their run here with Mahomes and Kelce's not getting any younger, and we'll see exactly what he ends up deciding to do here. But, like, they need help at a lot of spots. They need help at receiver. They need help at running back. They could probably use some more help on the offensive line. Defensively, they've had some guys that are starting to get a little bit older up there. So, like, Kansas City is going to have to retool their roster here a little bit, I think, if they're going to get back to being, the class of the AFC that we've just gotten used to them being here. But, at 9, there are a couple options that could be there that are very interesting. Like, you think about the idea of Carnell Tate to Kansas City or Jeremiah Love to Kansas City and giving Mahomes some more weapons to operate with on the offensive side of the ball. Very interested to see what they do at number 9.
Yeah, it seems like offensive skill guy is the move for them. And it's like, okay, so if you if that team just adds a dynamic difference maker as a skill guy, like you said, there's some aging and stuff on defense. Like the roster is kind of eroded a little bit. But if you just add one huge difference making skill guy, how much of a difference does that make for the Chiefs in 1 year? I'm fascinated to see. Now, in this particular situation, they did not have a chance to draft
They did
Love.
not.
He went one spot earlier, so it's Tate. I'd love to know if they did have a chance. If Jeremiah Love is sitting there, 'cause, like, I mean, the Chiefs haven't really had, like, Kareem Hunt, before all his issues and everything, he was absolutely a difference maker in that offense. It's not like they have never had running back difference makers in that offense, but for the most part they haven't. But what would Love look like in that offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could look pretty good, but like you said, they've never really had that type of guy with Mahomes paired together. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. More discussion on Rex Rhodes' first mock draft coming up next. We'll have Brian Poyle at 7:30. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Rhodes, 1025 the game. Robbie and Rex Rhodes, 1025 the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll have Brian Poyle with us here coming up in about 12 minutes at 7:30. Reacting to Rex Rhodes' first mock draft that he participated in at The Athletic with the other NFL beat writers at The Athletic. Joe, so we talked about this a little bit with Kuharski. I'm interested to really drill down on this with you. When it comes to Reese, Bailey, and Reuben Bain, who are three very different in terms of their style players that the Titans could consider at number 4 when it comes to edge rusher. How do you compare those three? What do you make of what Kuharski was talking about yesterday in terms of there, you wish maybe that there wasn't a weakness with all of them, or at least a perceived weakness that you had to really study in on if you're the Titans, right? Like the thing with Reese is, I mean, the athleticism is off the charts. People have made the Micah Parsons comparison as an off-ball linebacker to, make a transition and be a pass rusher, and you can move him around on the defense. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that, strictly as an edge rusher, just hasn't played that much, right? Like, strictly as the edge rusher. David Bailey, kind of the knock on him has been, early downs. What's he going to be as a run defender early in his career in the NFL? And then there's the arm size thing with Reuben Bain that people are going to be really focused in on, and I'm sure that'll come up a lot next week when the NFL Combine comes around. So how do you view all that, Joe, when it comes to these edge rushing options that the Titans are going to have, or at least have the potential to have at number 4, and how you stack those guys against each other and the weaknesses, the strengths of the whole thing? Second view of the day for Rex Road. One per hour at this point.
Wow, and really struggling to unmute. Yeah, sorry, Gus and Quinn were losing their bleep, so I had to mute myself
Over
earlier.
what? What happened?
Well, because Katie just took a Uber to the airport, so they were, I think, barking either at her to please come home, or sick of Joe,
Okay.
or
I'm just
barking at the
making sure there's no, squirrels or
intruder.
anything, yeah, coming through there.
No, but sometimes Quinn, man, she's got like some kind of a sense for coyotes, man. Like when coyotes are mating, which is now, and we're not far from coyotes, boy, sometimes like at like 2 a.m., she'll just go out there and flip out, and it's like, this has to be about coyotes.
That's not
Interesting,
good.
huh?
Gotta keep an eye on those things.
No, we do not. Yeah, keep the coyotes away from my dogs. Yeah, so on the edge rusher front, so I'm going to like Brugler's, his ranking stop and he is Reese number one. Again, I just, if this is how people think, and again, he throws the Micah Parsons comparison there. He said he's somewhere between Parsons and Jalen Walker in terms of his pro projection. And I think that's, at least that's like a guy who, I mean, I guess, I don't know if it's a good thing, but it's like, well, at least you don't probably don't have to worry about it. He'll be gone, but yeah, I think Bailey seems, and we, you and I have talked about it. He's the guy who I just like him. I just feel like if he's made progress as a run stopper, and it was pretty dramatic last year, per the people who watch the film for a living, I like that. I like that as a trend. And again, when I watched him, I saw him dominate in both aspects. It doesn't mean he consistently does. Obviously his appeal is just the speed. He's got to add more moves and all that stuff. Bane, though, is really interesting, man, because Bane, and most people who look at these guys closely would probably give Bane like the all-around player and motor edge. Just a powerful, a variety of moves, just a wrecker, a little bit more than like Bailey's, a little bit more of a straight up speed guy. But then you get into the length thing, and it's like, if the Titans were to take Bane, I would not like, I think that's, to me, that's almost the subplot of all of this, because there's other positions and other things you have to consider, and there's a receiver. But the Bailey Bane thing, if the Titans end up taking Bane at four, it'd probably be a little bit of a surprise, at least as we sit here now. I wouldn't be mad about it. I understand the numbers. It's like no one with that arm length like has ever had double digit sacks. Like there's something to that. I'm not dismissing it, but I also there, some people can break molds and can be exceptions to rules, and he might be one of those guys.
When is the, I was thinking about this yesterday. When is the last time the Titans had an edge rusher that people were like legitimately terrified of, right? And they've had some good edge rushers, right? Like Brian Arakpo was toward the end of his career. He had a decent year with the Titans when he first got here. It was 7 sacks. He had another really good year with the Titans with 10 and a half in 2016. Like he was a good player for the Titans, right? You had Jason Babin back in 2010 who had 12 and a half sacks for the Titans. You had Kyle
Yeah.
VandenBosch. Like, is that
Oh,
how far we're
beast.
going back? Like, is it like Babin or VandenBosch? Were people like, Harold Landry was a good player. Bud Dupree, when he was on the field, could have been, was a good player. And Jeffrey Simmons is, I'm talking specifically edge rusher here. But like, when's the last time that the Titans had an edge rusher that people were like, oh my God, like that? I just terrified of that guy. I think it may
Yeah,
be
it's a good.
VandenBosch.
Yeah, I mean, Arakpo had some moments. Arakpo was pretty good. I thought he had a double digit season in there.
He did 10 and a half in 2016.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you said that. In 16. But was he like a terror? Not quite. I think the Titans collectively were that in 21, because Dupree had a stretch there where he was healthy, and then that made Landry better, that made Simmons better, and Autry.
Autry, yep.
I mean, that group was terrifying. And that was the strength of the team. And that really is what got them there more than anything. You lose Derrick Henry, and that's really, it's that and some big time like performances like Ryan Tannehill, AJ Brown. I remember a win over San Fran that was all about AJ Brown. But yeah, like the actual, this guy is the number one thing the offense talks about. This particular edge player is the number one thing we have to worry about. We have to deal with, okay? It probably is Van den Bosch.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest
That's way
example
too long.
in team history here since they moved to Nashville is definitely Javon Kearse. But I'm just saying, like, over the
Right.
totality of the time they've been here, there haven't been that many guys that they've had. And we've talked about it. I mean, they haven't drafted an edge rusher in the first round since 2010. So not that all that's, the reason why you do this. I'm just saying, like, if you could land one of those guys where the defense is just absolutely terrified of them, man, that would be really nice. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Brian Poyle will be with us coming up next. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad at 745. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 the game. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. Preds on the break right now with the Olympics going on, but they'll be back in action next week. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Predators Assistant General Manager Brian Poyle to the program, brought to you by Arrow Exterminators. Going beyond the call, Arrow Exterminators, a proud partner with the Nashville Predators. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robbie and Joe. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate
Good.
You taking time to be with us. Well, Brian, I want to start here because, first off, it's so much fun to have NHL players back in the Olympics, and we saw just a great day of hockey yesterday. So USA's made the semifinal here. Canada's in the semifinal. We'll see how it all shakes out and if that ends up being the matchup in the gold medal game. But what do you make of what we've seen in the Olympics to this point, and what do you make of the squad that Team USA has put together and their chances here to compete for gold?
I couldn't agree with you more, Robbie. What a day for hockey internationally. And wow, three games go to overtime yesterday. It was incredible. I had a hard time, and so did our management team working yesterday. We started the day with practice over at Bridgestone. And then as soon as practice ends, all of us players, coaches, trainers, managers, we were watching the Canada-Czech game in the player lounge. It was tremendous. And to watch our players act like our fans and cheering and hooting and hollering and rooting on former teammates. It was an incredible day of hockey. And I think it's great that Canada was able to pull out the victory in overtime and then go back to Bridgestone Arena and watch Philip. Well, first it was Roman and Juice and Eric play in a tight game and that go to overtime and have Finland come back and win. And then to top it off in the back half of the day with U.S. and Sweden and watching Philip play. And gosh, what a nail biter that game was, and to see U.S. win. So I believe the NHL and the PA are getting exactly what they hope for in this Olympics, which is a fantastic exposure to our great game, trying to create new fans to our game. I think anybody who tuned into any one of those games yesterday was in for a treat.
I totally agree with that, Brian. Of course, Sidney Crosby did get banged up. Sounds like, he'll be okay. But we have the Fiala injury. This has been obviously a big discussion point. I imagine it will be moving forward. First of all, for you and you guys as you're watching, how much are you sort of, tensing up and hoping your guys don't get hurt? But also, do you think that, that will make it less likely that we have this? Or do you think like you just mentioned, the greater good for hockey will, I guess, supersede, these injury possibilities and allow us to keep having this moving forward?
It's a good question, Joe. But all I can tell you from our guys, from our players, from our team, we all want the Olympics. We all want the Four Nations. It's best on best. The very best players in the world competing against each other. Who doesn't want to see that and watch that? And yeah, use a guy like Erik Haala, who this is his first Olympics. I can tell you, you wouldn't believe what that meant to him and his family to get that call from Finland for his first chance to play for his country. The patriotism for all our players, and in particular the European players, how much it means to them to be able to play in these games. So Of course, we don't want anyone getting hurt, so their NHL teams don't have their services coming back. But hopefully that's limited, and that we really get what we all want, which is just to see the best players playing at the highest level, seeing them showcase their skill in one of the greatest games on earth. So it's unfortunate a couple of injuries have happened so far, but I think, like you mentioned, the greater good of the opportunity for these games being showcased at this level internationally to grow our fan base is phenomenal.
So, Brian, as you know, I mean, it's been an extremely condensed schedule this year in the NHL, and the break's happening right now. A week from today, you guys are back at it, taking on the Blackhawks, and then it's right back into the mix, right back into the race as the trade deadline is coming up here. So, you know, as a staff, as you guys are piecing together, you know, your plan over the next couple of weeks, as you're looking at the standings and where you guys sit when the break ends and you guys come back and start playing next week, how do you kind of handle these next couple of weeks here as a staff before the NHL trading deadline? Because, you know, we've talked about this on the show for a couple of months now. Like, you look in the mirror and you say, well, the first part of March, trading deadline seems far away. It's not that many more games before you have to make a decision. So what's that process going to be like for you guys over the next couple of weeks here?
You're right, Rob. I mean, the process is started well before these 2 weeks. We've got five games left before the trade deadline. But the process, the planning, the preparation, just as you guys have been talking about it for the last 2 months, we've been working on it for the last 2 months. And Barry, Jeff, Scott, myself, our entire team, our scouts, we're making sure every rock is uncovered and taken a look at, and making sure we're putting ourselves in a great position to help our team currently and in the future. And I think that we've rehearsed it. We've gone over it. Barry's doing a good job of working the phones, talking to all the other fellow GMs. It'll be a really exciting week. And as you noted, in the standings, there's a lot of things that are still up in the air for a lot of teams. I mean, who are the buyers? Who are the sellers? Who are the teams that feel confident that they're 100% in the playoffs? Who are the teams that are teetering? Can they get themselves in? So what'll be interesting these next 2 weeks is who steps up and wants to, you know, put more poker chips in, and who maybe isn't as a little bit more hesitant and wants to maybe be a little more careful. So, you know, and then Joe, to take what you mentioned a couple minutes ago with injuries, you know, use LA as an example. Kevin Fiala has sustained a significant injury that took him out for the rest of the year. Probably thankfully for them, they had just acquired Panarin, but how does that affect all those teams? So it'll be a fun time and a busy time these next 2 weeks.
Yeah. How do you guys balance, Brian, you got this team that has worked so hard to get back into play here and has played a lot of good hockey recently after a rough start. You got some veterans, you know, guys who want to win. They want the best opportunity to win and have kind of earned that. But also there is the big picture. There's the long term. Like, how as you guys are discussing these things, how difficult is that, I guess, you know, to think long term? You know, what's this offer for this guy, et cetera, while also knowing that you may be, to an extent, kind of pulling the rug out from under a team that has worked so hard to get where they are?
Yeah, another good question. I think you mentioned it being a tough decision. I would also say, as a compliment to our group, to our players, to our coaches, that they're making those decisions harder, or we're going to need to give a little bit more thoughtfulness to those decisions because they have played well. And our fans have enjoyed some really hard-fought wins at Bridgestone Arena here in the last 2 months, where our team is performing at a pretty high level, giving it all they have. And like you mentioned, we've got a pretty good mix right now of the veteran players like Ryan O'Reilly and Steven Stamkos and Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg all playing at high levels, contributing on a fairly regular basis, which any good team needs to have their veterans and their high-end players doing that. And then we've got these younger players that are showcasing themselves well and improving each day, like the Luke Evangelista and some of our younger D-men, and we've had Matthew Wood and different players come in too. So it's the team continues to evolve, which is, for me, is very exciting to see where we're headed. And that's why, you know, we're going to need to make very important decisions here in the next little bit so that we're making sure we're still heading in the right direction, both presently and in the future.
So, Brian, it's no secret. I mean, a transition of some kind is coming up here with Barry and that news coming out a couple of weeks ago that a general manager search will be underway. Bill Haslam made no secret that he wants you and Scott and Jeff to apply for this job. So I guess as you're sitting here trying to plan for the trade deadline and you also know that there's a transition of some kind coming up here, how are you handling that? What's kind of your approach to what could be coming here over the next few weeks?
Yeah, a lot of exciting things happening in Smashville. I guess first I would just mention that I'm happy for Barry Trotz to be able to make these decisions on his timeline and what's best for him and his family. I mean, he's had such a Hall of Fame worthy career, in my opinion, as a coach and now helping out with us as a manager, that I'm first and foremost happy for him and everything that he's done to help our team and work on his timeline. And I'm also super excited about the future of the Predators. And you mentioning Bill Haslam. I mean, I think we are very fortunate to have Bill as our owner. I think he's already done great things for our organization. I think Bill, with the combination of Sean Henry, Michelle Kennedy, what they're about to do when we try to build a new Bridgestone Arena while keeping it going and renovating that space, Centennial. I just think there's so many special things happening in Smashville that I would love to be a part of that and continue to help build that together. So lots happening with our group. Like you mentioned right now, the focus is certainly on the trade deadline here for the next 2 weeks, but I am very excited and bullish on where the Preds are headed.
Well, it's going to be fun, Brian, to watch the Olympics close out here. You guys back in action a week from today, taking on the Blackhawks, and then it's full steam ahead after that. We appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you, Robbie and Joe. And just one thing I'll mention for our fans, if you don't have plans for tonight, we've got the Nash Vegas Casino and Auction happening at 6:30 at Bridgestone Arena. Come out, hang out with the coaches, the managers, the players, play some blackjack, play some poker, have some fun with us.
That's awesome. That's always a very fun event. Blast. Brian Poyle, our guest here on the program. Brian, appreciate you as always.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Preds Assistant General Manager Brian Poyle, brought to you by Arrow Exterminators, going beyond the call. Arrow Exterminators, a proud partner with the Nashville Predators. We will have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rexroad.
Rexroad finally gets something done.
Stop your whining!
There may not be that many cougars in the hills, but there are coyotes.
Coyotes are mating, which is now.
Oh, my filming is, you know,
elite.
Pretty
spectacular.
Pretty good.
There's cameras here, dude.
The lower area is perfectly covered.
I'm Paul Kuharsky. No, I'm Paul Kuharsky.
You better lawyer up.
Yeah, I am raising my voice at you.
It is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Keith is asking, you know, he was like, wow, I didn't know that coyotes mating was going to be part of the show today. I didn't either.
That's what happens in Nolensville.
I did, yeah. Listen, out here in the hills, let me tell you something. Every day I drive around Nolensville. I mean, last night, Katie and I drive, and I'm like, the traffic here, it's like we still have the same narrow farm roads, and yet it's like Manhattan traffic now during rush hour, which is so there's a lot of displaced coyotes around here, okay? So they mate, as animals do, and I think this is mating season. And so just if you have small dogs like we do, just be careful. Because, you know, every once in a while they'll kind of stray and get out there and get after the dogs. There's my little, you know, there's my
wildlife report from Rex Road.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I know a lot about that stuff.
Keep an eye on the coyotes out there, folks.
Watch those coyotes. They mate and like to eat little dogs. Okay, so I think this is a good time for this. This is another perma-rant. Like, there aren't that many original rants. I mean, how many gym rants have I had recently, right? Like, let's be real here. Like at some point you run out of things to be aggrieved by. But I think this is a good one to kind of recycle at least once a year. And I've been asking for this texter's name, but he won't tell me. And it's not really about this texter, but it's a great, he or she has given me a great example for all of us to remember something as we enter draft season. As we more and more in the next few weeks, we're going to have the combine coming up. We're going to be talking about all these players, comparing players at the same position, different positions, best available, the tests, the interviews, the film, the experts, the mock drafts, all that stuff. So this texter texted me as we're talking about the mock draft that we did, talking about Maui Goa seems to be most people's top tackle. Spencer Fanoh is the top for some, but is right there, right? And then you go, and there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch that I think will go in the first round. So this texter says the top tackle is Monroe Freeling. He's the tackle from Georgia. And I said, says who? And he says, the tape. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to watch a 6'7 athletic freak who bodied top-tier NFL defensive end talent and did it with an ankle injury. Okay, so let's just stop there. We kind of went back and forth, again. I was like, I said, well, what about the other guys? Like, have you watched the tape of the other guys? Because I'm like, I will not watch the tape. Dane Brugger watches the tape. People who do this for a living watch the tape. Nick Baumgartner watches the tape. We have them on our show. That's great. Good for them. And we'll go with that. And I said, he says he's not even close to what Monroe is. Go watch his tape. The NFL will take him over any other tackle. Okay. So this is the rant. You don't know a damn thing, dude. Whatever your name is, you don't know diddly. You know who else doesn't know diddly? Me. I don't know diddly. You know who else doesn't know diddly? Robbie, Ian, Kaharski. NFL GMs screw this stuff up every year. They're wrong every year. So please let's not act like we know, okay? Let's just all come from a place of humility and understanding that we can all look at things and have opinions on things. And I think this, I think Bryce Young's going to be amazing. Tua, oh, he's amazing. Oh, Ryan Leaf's better than Peyton Manning. I'm going through some of my stupid draft takes. I have them every year. We don't know a damn thing. Please don't act like you know. Please don't act like you have any enlightenment on these things beyond what people, again, who do this for a living, who screw it up every year. We can go back through Brugler's write-ups on guys. Last year, 5 years, 10 years. Brugler, any other NFL draft analyst. Kiper, whoever you want. And you can laugh your ass off at how wrong they were on some guys. Because you don't know what people are going to do once they get to the NFL. Once they actually play or in a system or in a locker room or in a scheme or in a city with a ton of money, you just don't know. Please let's not act like we do. As long as we can all agree on that, we can all throw our opinions out, argue about this or that, but understand that we're all freaking clueless, then I think this will be a much better experience. Thank you.
My success rate is very high. Very high. I need to be an NFL general manager. By the way, is Kiper evaluating anybody this year? Or is he still crying with what happened to Shadur last draft? Has he moved on to this year's draft yet, or is he still crying about Shadur?
That's a good question. I don't know. Kiper almost seems like he's almost like semi-retired. You know what I mean?
Kinda, yeah.
Like he kind of just pops in and goes, ah, let me tell you something. And then he just kind of goes away for a while.
Shadur
And
Sanders will be the greatest quarterback ever.
He did make the Pro Bowl.
He did. Yeah, he needs to probably just pump the brakes a little bit on that. Okay. Like I like him as a player too, but let's take it easy here.
Tyler asking, Robbie, did you and Ian know that you don't know diddly? Joe just firing strays everywhere. I
Well,
did pick that
actually,
up.
it is true. Now, listen. So tell me your worst takes, Robbie.
Oh man. I mean, look, I thought Treylon Burks was going to be good, so let me start there, right? Like I was like
Sure.
clamoring for the Titans
Who
to take
didn't?
Treylon Burks. So,
Yeah.
I didn't foresee him getting hurt every time somebody touched him on the field, but that was a big time misfire on that front. So Treylon Burks would be the first one. Look, I'll raise my hand too. I thought the Isaiah Wilson pick was good when they made it
Yeah, me
as
too.
in the spot that they did. And then it turns out that he went crazy. So, like you said, I mean, that kind of shows you just with the Titans that you don't always know what that's going to look like. Like, I really, when the Packers selected Lucas Van Ness, I was like, yep, love that. And he hasn't done anything in the NFL. So I have a lot of bad takes.
Yeah, it's we all do. Like, again, the Philadelphia Eagles, some of their drafting has been atrocious.
Andre Dillard.
Yeah, atrocious. But also some of it's been terrific, and then they go out and they sign free agents, and they make great trades, A.J. Brown. Or they go out and they make a trade at the trading deadline, et cetera. Yeah, so here's another. Now, Santa in Portland has now taken me to a sub-rant, which is the, after Isaiah Wilson, I'm not taking a chance on any lineman from Georgia, LOL. Now, if you're kidding, that's fine, but please, I hope you're kidding, right? Like, these are all individuals. Like, go look at Georgia and their players in the NFL, including offensive linemen. There's some success there. You know, this one guy had serious issues, and it caught up to him and overtook his life. I mean, that's what happened. And again, you just don't know. And with a lot of these things, it's not that severe. It's just injury. I mean, injury is probably the biggest reason a lot of these things don't work out, right? Durability or lack of durability. But sometimes it is just bad team, bad situation. And sometimes it's just, you just don't know. It's like someone gets on the field, like even go way back, and I know it's different. Scouting is so, it's so much more intense now, right? From every aspect. But like Javon Kearse, like he was a very good player at Florida. For people who were of a certain age, you remember at Florida, like it was like, oh yeah, that guy's going to be an NFL player. Like no one thought he came in here and was like, who is this guy? How could he be this dominant right away? Like, you just don't – people didn't expect that. It happens both ways all the time.
I would like to say I first guessed Anthony Richardson. I'm going to take a victory lap on that one. I was like, don't do that. Do not draft Anthony Richardson that high.
Yeah. No, that was good. That was good. Trying to remember, I think there was someone who was an especially good evaluator of talent who thought he was going to be amazing. I forget who it was, though.
Yeah.
Who was that? I forget.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Charles Robinson, our expert, will be with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.